Welcome to this special coverage of the spring primary election, live on your local civic media radio station.
News director Terry Bell and a team of political experts will be tracking the results, which determine the candidates, both local and in the state Supreme Court race, moving on to the general election in April.
Your special election coverage starts now, live on your local civic media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Good evening. I am Kristen Bry.
And I am Jane Matnair.
And we come to you tonight across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network, but also via the Civic Media app. We invite you to listen to tonight's coverage anywhere on your smartphone by downloading the free Civic Media app in your app store.
And let us remind you as well that polls across the state are open for just under another hour. We've got about 53 minutes until 8 o'clock tonight. And if you are in line at 8 p.m., make sure you stay there, stay in line so you can cast your vote.
Absolutely. All right. Well, there are a number of races and results we're watching tonight, including the marquee race, which was on everyone's ballot today, no matter where you lived, the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There are four candidates, two progressives, two conservatives, with the top two vote getters advancing to the general for April 4th. The two progressives are Judge Janet Protasiewicz and Judge Everett Mitchell, and the two conservatives being Judge Jennifer Doro and former Justice Dan Kelly.
We're also going to be watching tonight mayoral races in Madison, Racine, and Green Bay. In Madison, there is the incumbent, Satya Rhodes Conway. Gloria Reyes is a former Madison School Board president and former Madison deputy mayor. Scott Kerr is a Madison traffic engineer. And Daniel Howell Jr. is a write-in candidate and a former Badger football player.
In Racine, there's the incumbent, Corey Mason, and then two challengers, Jim DeMatthew and Henry Perez.
Over to Green Bay, it's Eric Genrick, who's the incumbent. His challengers include Paul Boucher, a social researcher, Jane Yuza, a small business owner and a home healthcare worker, and Chad Weininger, the Brown County Administration Director.
And then moving over to Outagamie, Outagamie County Executive has a primary tonight with incumbent Tom Nelson, who we all know from the U.S. Senate race last year, but he is running for re-election for being Outagamie County Executive. And the two challengers there are Justin Krieger, who is an Outagamie County Board member, and Kevin Stern, who is a former Outagamie County Board member.
And then, of course, another big race, the 8th State Senate race, District in southeastern Wisconsin, three Republicans are vying for the right to take on the sole Democrat in this general special election to succeed former GOP state Senator Alberta Darling. She resigned the seat last year. So out of these three Republicans, one will move on to the general on April 4th, Dan Nodal, who is a current state rep, also Janelle Branchon, a state rep, and Van Mobley, the village president for Thienesville.
And there is only one Democrat running who will automatically advance to the general in April, Jody Habish-Sinikin, who is an environmental attorney. And we are very excited to host this hour. This is not a rerun. Jane and I are out of our our 11-2 slot and here in prime time with you. And then later in the hour, we will be joined at 7:30 by Dan Schaefer, who is a longtime Milwaukee journalist and the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. This month, he has written two great pieces on both the Wisconsin Supreme Court race and the race for Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. So we're excited to talk to him about that.
And then at the end of the hour, shortly before 8 o'clock, we're going to connect with all of our correspondents we have across the state on the Civic Media Network. And that includes Terry Barr, Melissa Kay, Don Brown, and Jimmy Koska. And before we hand it off at 8 o'clock to Civic Media News Director Terry Bell and Todd Alba, they're going to be anchoring the rest of the night from the Civic Media World headquarters in incredible Madison, Wisconsin.
And in the next segment, and it's kind of a good segue to talk about the importance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So in the next segment, we're going to hear an interview that news director Terry Bell had with New York Times' Reed Epstein, who in January wrote a piece titled "A Colossal Off-Year Election in Wisconsin." and it ran on the front page. It was really one of the first national headlines that I think brought this race to the attention of a lot of people, both in state and across the country. And since then, I don't know about you, Jane, but I have been surprised at how many national outlets have already picked up on this race when we're not even in the general yet. And so I've seen headlines from, you know, I'm used to seeing headlines about this, obviously, in our all of our statewide and local media, but seeing so many national outlets already talking about this. Because I think we know what a big deal this is, but the fact that so many people across the country are already on seeing that as well is hopefully going to help us with turnout.
Yes, let's hope. And I know we both went to cast our ballots after we got out of work today. And I got to mine about 2:45 and I was 1:52, which I didn't know if that was good or bad. And so I asked, and the poll worker said, I think that's pretty good.
I think for a spring primary, that's pretty good. I was 2:29 in my ward, which I also thought was good. I had someone respond to me on Twitter after I posted my obligatory I voted picture with my sticker, and someone said they were 6:98.
Wow.
They did not say where they live, but
wouldn't that be something?
But I saw, especially for people after work, just anecdotally on Twitter, people saying there was lines. And I think there's a chance that, as you and I have talked a lot about how much spring nonpartisan races, even in the general, don't always have great turnout in Wisconsin. But like I said, with that national coverage that we've already gotten for this race, that could be the kick in the pants that really gets a lot of people understanding, at least more than normal, that this is something that has a lot of issues on the line, and actually get people educated and to the ballots, not to the polling places, not only today, but also again in April.
Well, and I think as we talked about earlier today, there's just the assumption that everyone else is going to go to the polls. And when we talked about some of the dismal previous numbers that we've seen in spring elections and what the best outcome was, like 34%.
Yes.
a number of years ago, that's really sad. And considering that Wisconsin, as I understand it overall, turns out pretty well for
in the fall.
And granted, spring primaries, ooh, sexy, but so important. They're just, these are the things that touch you the closest. These are the races that will affect your lives the most directly.
Absolutely. And really not, I mean, obviously I think we talk a lot about the what's at stake with the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and that basically the winner of this race in April will decide whether conservatives or liberals have the majority in what is, we are always, a crucial presidential battleground state. And so you've probably started to already hear the chance that abortion is basically on the ballot again, because there is cases that could go in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court as regarding our 1849 criminal abortion ban. And these seven justices will be the people who decide the fate of access to abortion in the state. And again, it also comes back to redistricting. This is now, the federal court system has said this is a state issue. And so this is a potential opportunity to break free of the redistricting maps that we got last year prior to waiting for the 2030 census and the next round of redistricting. And it's been since 2008 that the conservatives had held the majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And so this could be a huge sea change in how politics happen in Wisconsin.
Well, I want to say, for anyone who might be listening who has not voted yet, you still have 45 minutes to go vote. And here is why redistricting is so important. If you are tired of our lawmakers gaveling in and gaveling out on legislation that you think deserves to have at least a few moments of a hearing, if you're disgusted by that, if you're disgusted with lawmakers taking a 9-month break and still getting paid for a full-time job, if you would like some more accountability from the people who claim to represent you, this is a really important step in making that happen.
Absolutely. It is one of the issues I care about most, even though sometimes it is hard to hammer home as far as connecting the dots of how important this is. And doesn't mean I don't continue to try, though.
And the more people know, the more, again, hopefully talking about these things and educating people about these things is what's going to generate them to get up and go out to the polls.
Absolutely. And I've been encouraged just anecdotally from the conversations I've had on our show, As Goes Wisconsin, 11 to 2, Monday through Friday, but also across social media, as I've been trying to post videos about voting and information. I actually got a great message right before we came on of someone thanking me because they said, your videos helped me get 4 more people to vote today.
That's amazing.
So I came into tonight's programming with a big smile on my face to know that people care, people are listening, people are helping using the resources at outlets like Civic Media and all of our other news coverage across the state, being able to use that to motivate other people to vote. And so I am very excited, as the political nerd that I am, to stay tuned all night to the Civic Media coverage as results roll in. And when we come back, we have a very exciting interview between Terry Bell, our news director over here at Civic Media, and Reed Epstein, a reporter for the New York Times, talking about his report that he put out last month in the New York Times about our colossal off-year election. Stay tuned. This is Civic Media's spring election special coverage.
This is continuing coverage of the Wisconsin spring primary election on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Welcome back. I am Kristen Bry and she is Jane Matinair, and we are live in primetime for the spring primary election night 2023. It is not an overstatement to say that the election for Wisconsin Supreme Court carries bigger policy stakes than any other contest in America in 2023.
And you don't have to just take our word for it. That is what the New York Times reported in January. Reed Epstein wrote that article. He covers Wisconsin politics for the Times. Earlier today, he spoke with Civic Media News Director Terry Bell about what makes this race so unique and so important.
When I was out here in August last summer for the primary ahead of the governor's race, and even then, it was pretty clear that the Supreme Court race was probably going to be more important than the governor's race last fall, given the issues at play, given the stakes, given that will be decided based on whether conservatives or liberals have a Supreme Court majority later this summer.
A lot of people would be surprised by the notion that a Supreme Court race would be more important than a governor's race. Lay that out for me, please.
Well, Governor Evers can only do so much. Can't pass legislation. There's near supermajority Republican control of both chambers of the legislature. And so while the governor can veto things, his control over the direction of the state is relatively limited compared to governors elsewhere. But the court could throw out the state's abortion law. The court could force a redrawing of the legislative maps that have ensconced effectively permanent Republican power in the legislature. And once that happens, it's sort of a whole different political economy in the state, depending on what sort of maps replace the current ones. Should the court throw them out? And so there's really a potential here to have the biggest change in the state's government since 2010, when Scott Walker and Republicans swept power and rewrote a lot of the rules in the state that are in place now.
You mentioned how much this could change Wisconsin. How does it have ripple effects nationwide, potentially?
Well, you remember in December of 2020, when Donald Trump's lawyers were challenging 200,000 votes cast in Milwaukee and Dane counties, it was the Supreme Court that ruled against that. And it's not too far out of the realm of possibility to imagine another disputed presidential election at the end of next year that could come down to the court. And so that's one way. Certainly the court has also had a pretty significant how and who gets to vote in Wisconsin. And so if the Supreme Court invalidates some of more restrictive rules that have been put in place in Wisconsin recently, like the prohibition on drop boxes for early votes and some of the voter ID laws that have been put in place, that certainly would have the potential to alter, not just in a presidential election, but in Senate races and some of these other key statewide races that have ripple effects beyond Wisconsin.
What do you make of Janet Protasiewicz's decision to take these issues head on? Usually judicial candidates are reticent to talk about their feelings about issues, but if you ask her, she'll tell you what she feels about maps and ballot rules and abortion.
Yeah, you know, I think what she's done is made sort of an intentional effort to tell people what the stakes of the race are by basically telling people how she'll rule. And that has driven the conservative candidates a little bit crazy. But it's what it's done is really essentially remove maybe the last sort of piece that separated the courts from politics. And has stopped pretending that the courts are sort of apolitical bodies.
We're talking to Reed Epstein of the New York Times about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And I'm wondering if maybe Janet Protasiewicz has changed the way judicial candidates campaign from now on, or maybe this is just a one-off.
Well, I mean, it depends on if she wins, right? One of the bets that she and her team is making is that people don't actually care that she's telegraphing her position on a lot of these important issues. I think you're going to see after she's widely expected to advance out of the primary tonight, the Republicans and conservatives and whichever conservative candidate advances is going to hit her on this idea that she has predetermined her position on a lot of these cases. And the Protasiewicz team has studied this and determined that voters that decide elections in Wisconsin just don't care and won't hold that against her. And if they're right, I think we can expect this to become more the norm in states like Wisconsin that elect their Supreme Court justices.
On the conservative side, Dan Kelly has said that if Jennifer Doro beats him in the primary today, that his financial and political backing won't necessarily move over her way. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I saw Dan Kelly Monday night in Sheboygan and asked him about some of this. And he, particularly on the financial backing, if he had any inside knowledge about whether this would move or not. And he said he did not. He had about Dick Uihlein, a billionaire funder of conservative candidates in Wisconsin and elsewhere. He said he hadn't spoken with them about whether they would support Judge Doro if she advances and he doesn't. But it was just he was surmising that that was the case. You know, I find it a little hard to believe that people who are willing to spend millions of dollars to elect one conservative to the Wisconsin Supreme Court wouldn't be willing to spend millions of dollars a different conservative Supreme Court. That sort of stretches credulity a little bit, but we'll see. There hasn't been a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin with multiple conservative candidates in 25 years, and so it's a little bit uncharted territory for everybody involved.
Reed Epstein covers Wisconsin for the New York Times. He basically announced to America how important this race is back in January. Reed, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Terry. Good to talk to you.
It was really interesting to hear that from Reed Epstein as far as, it's been 25 years since it's been this crowded of a primary for the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And so I think that's the unique scenario that we're in right now of being waiting with bated breath on tonight's results of how this is going to turn out. And so in the next segment, after we take another break, Dan Schaefer, longtime Milwaukee journalist, is going to join us to talk about his reporting that he's done on both the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, but also Senate District 8 and the primary between the three Republicans there. The election night coverage continues right here on Civic Media Radio Network.
Wisconsin spring primary election coverage continues here on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Good evening. I am Kristen Bry, joined by Jane Matinere. And no, this is not a As Goes Wisconsin rerun. We are live in primetime for the spring primary election night 2023, continuing coverage from across Wisconsin this entire evening with results on key races affecting your future.
Please don't forget that polls across the state are open for just another 27 minutes. You have until 8 p.m. And if you are standing in line at 8 p.m., don't go away. Stay in line. You can still cast your vote.
Absolutely. And we are so happy to have our guest for this segment, who is here from his living room, just like all of us, Dan Schaefer, longtime Milwaukee journalist and the founder of The Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Welcome, Dan, to Spring Election Night 2023.
So happy to be here. Good to see you, Kristen.
So in this month, just in February, you wrote both a piece on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and on Senate District 8, both of those races. And so we're going to take one at a time. But with only 2 weeks ahead of the primary, you wrote your piece on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And it's a pretty unique scenario that we're in. As we just heard in the last segment from Terry's interview with Reed Epstein, it's been 25 years since we've had this crowded of a primary for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So as far as reporting on that, what were some of the unique aspects that you found?
Yeah, I think it really just comes down to the fact that there are the four candidates and the two on each side of the, you know, political fence in this race. And I think that is created this really interesting dynamic where you have a likely scenario where there's going to be one liberal candidate and one conservative candidate. You know, I was thinking back to the coverage I did in 2020, where there were in the primary there, where there was the, you know, Daniel Kelly was running for a full term, and you had the two liberal candidates who were battling it out on the primary night. Very different dynamic that we have here tonight with the with four candidates. You know, obviously there is a chance that two candidates of the same ideological alignment could advance to the general election, but I think that's pretty unlikely. And I think, you know, I think there is a clear front runner going into the primary here, and I think there is a big question going into the primary here.
And the big front runner, I'm assuming, being Judge Janet Protasiewicz, largely, would you say, beyond the fact that she is so far and ahead away with fundraising? Is that the main reason why she is really the front runner right now?
Yeah, I think that does matter a whole lot in these, you know, lower turnout off cycle elections. You know, the fundraising, it's an ugly business to say that to talk about how much the fundraising matters, but it absolutely does. And she has been lapping the field in fundraising, not only out fundraising the other liberal candidate, Everett Mitchell, but out fundraising, I think, the whole field combined. So I think that's really important. I think also important is the fact that she's picking up a lot of key organizational endorsements. She's got a lot of endorsements from unions, and those are the type of groups that will drive turnout in these type of elections. So I think that really matters a whole lot. So I think, you know, and she's getting some high profile endorsements as well. You know, groups like Emily's List that had not endorsed in a state level judicial candidate like this ever in its 40 year history, jumped into this race to endorse her before the primary. Also, I thought was a pretty significant one. We heard from former U.S. Senator Herb Kohl, who endorsed Judge Janet last week as well. You may recall that Kohl sat on the Senate Judiciary Committee for more than 20 years in his long time serving in the U.S. Senate, confirming many U.S. Supreme Court justices from that role in that committee as well. So I think that's a pretty significant endorsement too. So I would be genuinely shocked if Janet Protasiewicz did not emerge from the primary as one of the two general election candidates.
But Dan, even if that doesn't happen, there's going to be a lot of money coming from the other side for whoever makes it from that side of the aisle.
Yeah, I think we have to savor these last few hours before the primary is ended, because once we have the two candidates, once we have your typical left-right dichotomy of this race, once we get through the primary, I think the floodgates of national spending on this race are going to open, and it is going to be like kind of like nothing we've ever seen before for a race of this nature. Being that some of the top issues in this race are ones that bring a lot of national attention, thinking about the abortion issue is going to get a ton of spending on both sides of it going into this race. Redistricting, gun rights, voting rights, so many issues that are wrapped up in this. And I think a lot of the, kind of national organizations, a lot of the outside groups are waiting till they have, a candidate that they can align with to really open the floodgates of that spending. So we're going to be seeing a lot of ads on TV in Wisconsin. I know we're all still tired of the ads from last fall in Wisconsin, but they're going to get cranked back up again in a really big way over the next few weeks here.
Do you think the text messages will be any better? Will we get smarter or funnier? Anything?
You've been getting a lot already. I've been getting
already. Oh yeah. I think I got 6 today.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of different ways I should start messing with the people, asking them questions, just doing some journalistic due diligence to find out about these volunteers. But I haven't jumped into that yet. Maybe that'll be something I'll be doing in the weeks to come here.
So one of the things that I think really stood out to me in this race, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised because I think we saw glimpses of this with the Republican primary for governor in the fall, but it's felt, for maybe lack of a more delicate term, messy between the two conservatives running. And that not only just in their campaigns, but also in the right-wing media that exists in Wisconsin, and whether it's Mark Belling or the different camps that have picked their candidate and the way that they're kind of fighting publicly. Has that surprised you?
I mean, I don't think it surprised me considering the primary that we just had last August. I think it's a similar dynamic to the primary that we had there. I think there's just, the Republican Party in Wisconsin seems pretty splintered right now. And you have some of the kind of Walker aligned folks and some, hardcore Trump conservative types. And then you have some other people who are maybe trying to tack to the middle to maybe win back some of those suburban voters that they've been losing in droves in the last few election cycles. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think that, it's really up in the air about who's going to be the conservative candidate. In people that I'm talking to, people aren't really sure who it's going to be. I put a poll up on my Twitter account just about an hour ago to just see in the final stages who people thought would be, who people were expecting to win tonight's primary among the conservatives. On my Twitter account, 58% think Doro's going to win. 42% think Kelly's going to win. Pretty close there as well. Obviously, my Twitter is not exactly the best sample of the conservative voter base, but we're not getting a lot of public polling on this race. So we're just
gonna at least you're self-aware, Dan.
Yes, that's right.
You are listening to special primary coverage of the spring 2023 election. And our guest is Dan Schaefer, the longtime Milwaukee journalist and the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication that you should really subscribe to. I'm just saying that.
You should subscribe. It's $5 a month.
Easy to get started. And if you already subscribe, you can get a gift subscription for people. We've got a lot of people getting gift subscriptions lately, so check that out too.
Wonderful. All right. Well, I want to make sure that we have enough time to also talk about the more unusual race, because every race except this one in the primary and the general is a nonpartisan, even if it's in name only, but a nonpartisan race, except the special election that is happening for Senate District 8, where there is one Democrat who will automatically advance, but three Republicans running. And you also covered that race, I think just last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, just last week.
And so go ahead. I'd love to hear more about what you found out in that race.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a very interesting district. This District 8, it is a district that includes parts of Waukesha County, Washington County, Ozaukee County, and Milwaukee County. It is a big, weird, gerrymandered district that includes lots of things that don't really connect. But this is where we are. This is the chessboard that we're playing on right now. And so, like you mentioned, Jody Habersynnikin, the one Democrat not facing a primary challenge, she will advance to the general election. Hearing lots of very good things about her campaign. So I think, you know, it's a Republican leaning district. It's one that has been represented by a Republican for more than 20 years. But I think there is a real chance for Democrats to flip this one. And I think there are three pretty Trumpy conservatives, pretty Trumpy Republicans running in this race. You have State Representative Janelle Branchen, who was endorsed by Donald Trump, maybe the most extreme election denier in the state of Wisconsin. You have Dan Knoedl, also an election denier, signed on the letter to Mike Pence not to certify the election on January 6th. He's been getting kind of more of the establishment Republican support. And then you have a wild card in Van Mobley, the Thiensville Village president, who I was kind of coming into this thinking that he was, you know, going to be like a distant third place. But I just saw in some campaign finance reports that he's self-funded and spent quite a bit on this race. He poured $100,000 of his own money into this campaign. So I am not sure where that ended up going. But I think, you know, that it's more of a three-way race than the kind of two, you know, one or the other, Branchen or Knoedl, between the two state representatives there. So a pretty weird one.
How much do you make as the Thiensville Village president?
I mean, I don't think that is his only job.
No, okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you're thinking of moving up there and making a run.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty good gig.
Dan, what would be some of the ramifications if a Democrat would take this seat? What are the what's the bigger picture for what that would do to the legislature?
Well, as you know, after November's election, the Democrats were able to prevent a full supermajority in the Wisconsin state legislature. They were two seats shy of a two-thirds supermajority in the Wisconsin state assembly, but they actually did get there, that two-thirds threshold, in this 50-50 state where a Democrat won the statewide race for governor, mind you. They did get there with a two-thirds supermajority in the state Senate by flipping one seat there. So this, after Alberta Darling retired last December, they no longer had that two-thirds supermajority. So this would, if a Democrat were to flip this seat, that would prevent that supermajority in the state Senate. And, you know, for a veto override to come into play, you need both chambers of the House to be a two-thirds supermajority. But in a post-election interview last fall on conservative talk radio, Robin Voss said the GOP's supermajority status in the state Senate would unlock a quote-unquote new power for the Wisconsin state legislature, saying that they could potentially impeach statewide elected officials. If you're hearing Robin Voss talking about unlocking a new power, you should be pretty worried. So I think that the ramifications of this race, the stakes are pretty high. Just to prevent another weird power from being something that Robin Voss could wield from his perch as the assembly speaker.
Chucklemeister Robin Voss, everyone knows, as we coined him earlier today.
Yes, he's hilarious, I've heard.
All right, Dan Schaefer, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight. Any gut instincts before we let you go? Any gut predictions?
I still think it's going to be Doro as the conservative candidate. I think it's going to be Doro Protasiewicz.
All right. Well, we will hold you to that, Dan Schaefer. Please, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight. When we come back, we will check in with our correspondents who are all across the state and check in on the races that they will keep you updated with the results throughout the evening. Stay tuned.
Special live coverage of Wisconsin's spring primary election continues on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Welcome back. I am Kristen Bride, joined by Jane Matinair, and we are live and have been live for the last hour for the spring primary election night 2023. And we are doing the pregame coverage from across Wisconsin this entire evening. We're about to hand it off at the top of the next hour to Terry Bell and Todd Alba, who will be your anchors for the rest of the evening as results start to roll in. But with 10 minutes left, Jane, can people still get in line?
You know what, Kristen Bright? People can still get in line. And if you are in line, you want to stay there, because even if you're there at 8 o'clock on the dot, you can still cast your ballot. So if you've made the effort to do this, and I want to thank the weather gods for holding off that we didn't have a nightmare to deal with, and hopefully that helped turnout tonight. So you still got time. If you live close by, go cast your ballot. It's really, really important.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we want to take some time to check in with some of the correspondents you're going to hear from throughout the evening. So let's go ahead and go over to Mr. Don Brown, who is coming to us from Waukesha over at WAUK. Don, are you there?
Sorry about that. That was my.
I feel that I've had that problem.
Don, I heard you. You sounded good when we checked in before we kicked off tonight, but you have a lot of reverb right now. And so instead, Melissa, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
All right, let's start with you and then we'll go back to Don. Melissa, you are up in Wisconsin Rapids at WFHR. What are some of the races that you are following tonight?
So tonight, I am covering the Green Bay mayor race, the Outagamie County executive race, and then also looking in on the Wisconsin Rapids School Board, Stevens Point Mayor, and a little bit of the Wausau School Board as well.
Interesting. And as far as any insight, because I don't think we mentioned at the top of the hour, how many people are running for the Wisconsin Rapids School Board and how many seats are available?
There are, I believe, 2 seats available, and they are, we have 5 people running. Yes.
Well, okay.
5 people running.
So will the top 3 then move on?
I believe so.
Okay.
Has it been very contentious, Melissa? I know school board races have been one of the hotter things over the last year or so, and I'm just wondering what the temperature has been like in the Rapids.
Well, yes, they've been a little contentious. The unfortunate thing is there's these anonymous Facebook groups that are jumping in and throwing out a lot of data without a lot of explanation of that data. The very blatant, we're giving you the info so you can do your own research, which you know, sounds nice, but doesn't actually mean a whole lot.
Are they at least citing sources when they put that data out?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're saying this is the info from DPI. Okay. You know, we found this for you. It's out there for you to find. It's hard to find on the website, but we can find it for you. We're not going to tell you what it means, but look at these numbers going down.
Calvin, am I good? It's a challenge all over the country. This has been happening with school boards and what some believe might be some outside messaging,
yes,
and outside influence that is kind of pushing some of this. So that will be an interesting race to watch tonight, Melissa.
It absolutely will.
All right. Well, we'll check back in with Melissa throughout the evening, and now we'll go back over to Don. Don, are you there?
I think I'm good, Kristen. Can you hear me?
You
okay?
Are good. You sound excellent. So Don's over at WAUK.
Excellent.
Our stomping ground usually. And so what are some of the races you are going to be following tonight, Don?
I might be the hardest working reporter in our whole network. I've got 20 candidates for 3 special aldermanic elections in the city of Milwaukee. And it's quite a field. So in District 1, we have a former mayor's daughter who served as the alderman in that district for 17 years. So I'm sure she's spinning influence on that that family name. We've got teachers. We've got a retired assistant police chief in District 5, some social workers. So one thing I love as a former alderman with these city elections is they're a lot harder to predict than what you normally think, especially when you have such a crowded field. In District 9, in which the incumbent had to leave the seat for misconduct and some, I guess, some campaign abuse allegations, you've got 8 candidates. So really, that could be anybody's race from what I'm looking at there. I don't see like anyone that really stands out in the field. So, and then of course here is our I'm closest to the 8th Senate seat that Roberta Darling is vacating. And yeah, just like our friend Mr. Schaefer, I was really surprised when I saw that Van Mobley is in many people's books the front runner, just because of the how much he has outspent. You know, the other two candidates are spending Branchen spending like $60,000 and Nodal's spending like, or no, she's $20,000, Nodal's like $60,000 to Mobley's $106,000. So that I'm looking forward to seeing how that one shakes out, especially when you look at the experience of the other two candidates. Seems like they've got a longer legislative record than Mobley, who's the village president of Theansville, although he was being a professor at Concordia for you know, I guess close to 20 years, should definitely count for something. So lots to look forward to.
Absolutely. And then over Terry Barr, you're coming in from Madison.
Hi, Kristen and Jane. Yes, I am in Madison. I'm following two really interesting races, mayoral-wise, tonight. I've got the one in Madison where we have four candidates. Two, of course, will move on to April. We have a write-in candidate tonight in the Madison mayoral race, and he says he's not going to give up. Even if he goes nowhere with this particular election, he's going to keep running. He really wants to get in and make some changes in what he said is needed in Madison. I've also got the Racine mayoral race. Three candidates here to move on. There's been some pretty good back and forth between all three of the candidates. Overall, they don't agree on anything. And the two that are going up against the incumbent, Corey Mason in Racine, they say they want him out. So they agree on that one thing that they are saying Corey Mason has to go. I know we're getting short on time here for you, so I'll send it back to you right now.
Well, you will hear from all of our correspondents throughout the evening as results start closing. The polls are closing in 3 minutes, so if you are in line and are also listening to us, you can stay in line. But we are going to wrap up our portion of tonight's event. Jane, this has been a pleasure. I will see you tomorrow at 11. And we will hand it off to Mr. Terry Bell and Mr. Todd Alba to continue to anchor. And as the results roll in, thank you for listening to us. This is Civic Media.